I think we're live.
Dude, heck yeah.
Okay. Sweet. Well, hopefully we don't run into any technical issues because Connor is not here today. He's our tech guy. So
nice.
He dropped off the equipment. He's good to let us use it for a couple hours. Hopefully we're not here for a couple hours.
Yeah.
But quick recap. I've done 2 episodes by myself because of just scheduling conflicts and stuff. So I recorded 1 episode 2 weeks ago out of my car, which was really funny. So I just had my headphones on and I was just talking away, just rambling off. And then last week, Connor was able to still drop off the equipment, but no one else was able to make it. So I just sat in here for like an hour after we got the room all prepped up and ready to go for paint. And I just sat in here and talked for like an hour and a half.
Dang.
Just rambling. So yeah, we got a little bit more structure this time, which is good. So we got Kyle in the house.
Yep.
And then we also got Preston, who stuck around after Saturday morning speed training session.
Yeah, today was legit.
How'd your workout go, dude?
Well, we had a lot of accommodating resistance on those squats, so I had to drop it down just a little bit to maintain that speed work.
And you accidentally did body weight on the rhino squat on accident.
Oh, yeah.
Sandbag.
Ty comes over. No, he overachieved. Ty comes over and he goes, "What's your 50%? And I'm like, 185. And Preston starts freaking out. He's like, "I thought we were supposed to do body weight." I'm like, "Oh, no."
Yeah. Like, I only did like 90 pounds more than my 50%.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. So you put in the extra work today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. Awesome. Well, good. Yeah. We're starting a new 3-week wave all over again. The timing actually works out really, really well because in 4 weeks, 4 Saturdays from today, it'll be Strength Fest. So we're pretty much not training that whole weekend just due to the situation.
We'll be doing our maxes.
Yeah, so like the week of, we're going to test some raw maxes. We do have one guy out of the morning crew, Jarrett, who's actually going to compete in his first powerlifting meet there at Strength Fest. So we're all kind of on his schedule as far as the waves go and keeping the percentages and whatnot. We're kind of sticking with him, which it falls into place that we only have 3 weeks left of speed work. So,
sweet.
We're switching it up a little bit this time. Instead of going up in percentages, I decided that it'd be a good idea to keep the percentages the same. So we're just sticking to 50% bar weight for 3 weeks straight. But the accommodating resistance with bands and chains is going to go up each week.
So the resistance is already ridiculous.
I know, it's freaking
awesome.
Oh
my gosh.
Yeah, we measured the band tension today. It was like 35 pounds a side. So. Yeah,
plus the 90-pound chains. So
at the top, you're looking at over 100 pounds of resistance.
At the top for me and Preston, it's 170 pounds.
Heck yeah, dude.
So we're doing, he's doing like 20 pounds more than his actual max at the top. So I'm like 20 pounds off my max. It's already blowing us up.
I love it. Yeah, I think once we get around to testing some raw maxes, I think a lot of these guys are going to start blowing some numbers out of the water, which is a good thing because if you're not testing maxes somewhat regularly, at least in my opinion, as a new lifter, then your speed work tends to not really progress, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all based on a percentage of your max. So if you're not consistently upping that max, then your percentage really doesn't progress with it either. So
yeah, 100%.
Start watching people do their speed work and stuff, especially Kyle too, because every time I see Kyle do his speed work, I'm like, bro, you need a new max, because that's just that's moving way too fast and way too effortlessly.
I love speed work. Yeah. Today felt really
off
good.
The bench.
Like, well, at first
he just flies off the bench almost every time
when we're bench pressing.
Yeah.
Whoopsie. Well, I mean, I try to change it up here and there now because we started doing close grip, mid grip, wide grip on bench. And then even for speed work, I'm trying to adjust my feet differently every time or just try to relax at the box just a little bit more. Like today, for my 50%, felt really good, but your 50% should feel really good.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, that's about as light as we'll go, honestly. So we'll start at 50%, depending on band tension, whatever. We'll climb up to right around 60%. If the band tension isn't super heavy, then we could justify going up to 65-70%, but it's just kind of how you want to wave it. But that's the beauty of conjugate system type of training, is everybody's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You try to pick out the weaknesses of each individual and still falling within the parameters of the system itself, but everybody's kind of got little different tweaks that we try to work through. So
mm-hmm.
we had a couple guys in here that haven't trained with us for a really long time, that just schedules haven't really lined up and stuff. So they came in this morning and it was really fun to watch kind of where they were at and just say, hey, like, why don't you try widening your feet a little bit? Why don't you try, you know, mixing up your grip on the deadlift bars, things like that. So it's just a way for them, because that's the beauty of speed work, is that it's not maximum effort. You don't have to worry about straining through a heavy rep, but we have a ton of volume on that day. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, if we're going to do 8 sets of singles on deadlift, or if we're going to do 10 total working sets on a squat, that's 20 reps of practice right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good opportunity to, you know, change up your grip and change up your stance like you were talking about.
Yeah. I was going to say, cause I talked to Preston and Jarrett and I told them how I do 4 sets sumo, 4 sets conventional, just to get that form keeping everything locked in, everything's clicking still, both forms, because you shouldn't just depend on one. You should always work both, because they're going to depend on each other.
Exactly. So. Yeah, it's too many people, they'll do speed work on a deadlift and only stick to their competition stance, and I think that kind of does you a disservice, just because you're pretty much walking over $100 bills just to go pick up the quarters.
Or right? Quarters.
So anyway, yeah, that's what we got up to today. Friggin' speed work, man, just kicked everybody's butts, which is what Saturdays.
It was awesome.
Saturdays are all about that, man. We had a couple people that didn't even show up. I think we scared them.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about putting like 200 pounds of accommodating resistance on a bar,
we got on the group chat the night, well, I guess last night, and we kept telling everybody how brutal it was going to be this morning. And then it turns out that like 4 or 5 of them didn't even show up.
I expected like a lot of people to be here this morning, yeah, but it was only same. What, 8 of us, 9 of us?
The same 4 or 5 people that always show up.
That's right, man. Then we had our guest lifter. We had Brandon show up. Yeah. So shout out to Brandon for coming through.
He fit right in. It was awesome.
Heck yeah, man.
So funny.
He's a morning cool crew guy for sure. I told him he's got to move up here from Utah. He doesn't need to live down there anymore.
Yeah, 100%.
So I think he grew up around here. Maybe not grow up. I think he lived here for a little while, for a few years, and then he ended up going down to Utah for work. So.
Yeah,
trying to get with him and seeing if we can get him to move back up here.
I don't know. I've seen, because he trains at Lions Pride, huh?
Yeah.
That barbell. Okay, so I've seen the environment at that gym, and it is like the exact same kind of environment we put out.
Yeah, dude.
Like they're positive 24/7. They're having jokes the whole time. They're just messing around.
It's lots of energy, dude.
Yeah, they have a good time.
Yeah, and him and Ty just rolling out of the squat like rack this morning.
They've been best friends forever.
Oh, that was fantastic.
It was funny. It was awesome.
No, I love it, man. He said he's going to try to make it up next Saturday, too. So he's been coming up on the weekend. So we'll see if we see more of him. So, yeah, shout out to him. We threw him right in the deep end of just everything we were doing. And he rolled with it, man. He held his own. So
yeah.
He will be competing at Strength Fest as well. So I want to say this is his first powerlifting meet.
That's awesome.
He's done that'll be great.
Done the strongman stuff. He's been doing that for a couple of years. He did bodybuilding forever. He went and competed, got on stage, did all that stuff, according to my understanding.
That's sweet.
Yeah, he's a good dude. We love him.
Maybe you'll get bit by the iron bug for powerlifting.
That's
and then
right.
He's going to get hooked.
Well, he was talking to us a little bit in between sets, and it kind of sounded like he was wanting to really dabble heavily into both, where he considered wanting to start doing a meet every once a year, but also doing a strongman comp once a year as well.
Okay.
So kind of taking like the 6 months to really peak for a powerlifting meet, then taking the next 6 months and looking for some kind of competition that he can do within the world of strongmen, just kind of bounce back and forth, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
So keeps the training fresh. It keeps the goals alive. Like there's nothing wrong with that at all.
That'd be sweet.
So
having an athlete doing multiple sports, it's going to be pretty challenging for him to go from one event to another. Cause you might be, I don't know. It actually could benefit him if there's a deadlift max for a strongman event after just doing a powerlifting meet. But if you got like log press, after working on your bench for so long, maybe it'll benefit him, or maybe it'll be kind of difficult to get back into it.
Yeah, it could be.
He's got plenty of time.
And I, based on how he made it sound, is that he's pretty much just ditched all the strongman event type training for a little while.
Which you should.
Just to get prepped up for this powerlifting meet. So, I mean, I don't even think he's been doing a lot of sandbags, a lot of overhead press, been really trying to dial in on the bench press. But I think it's going to have a... advantage to him coming back into strongman, because I feel like a bench press is going to carry over really well into overhead press. I don't see it going the other way though. Like a lot mm-hmm. of dudes that are great at overhead pressing, I don't see that the PRs being set there, like on a log or an axle overhead press, doesn't mm-hmm. translate over into a better bench press.
That makes sense.
So it kind of goes one way. It doesn't really transfer over the other way. So
I can see that.
I think he'll surprise himself. I think his bench will start getting really good, which in turn, it's going to strengthen up his triceps really well, better lat engagement. He's going to have better stability pressing over his head. So excited to see where he'll be at. So, well, I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys, because we have like no agenda for what I was wanting to talk about today. So I wanted to touch on the concept of max effort training, specifically the max effort method of conjugate, and kind of pick your guys' brains and start a little conversation based on that. My game plan going into the next couple episodes of the podcast is to really break down conjugate within its separate forms, I guess, its separate mm-hmm. methods, so that by the time someone's gone through and listened to the next three or four episodes,
they have a good understanding.
They have a great understanding of what conjugate is, and more importantly, what conjugate is not. Because that's the thing I think people get the most mixed up about, mm-hmm. is they're like, oh, well, you train conjugate, so you must be doing this and this. And I'm like, no, dude. Like,
well, it's most people,
exactly opposite of that.
People are going to go against something they don't understand.
Yep.
So that's just how life works.
I think it would be an incredible disservice to the listeners and anybody that's following the Chase Strong stuff on Instagram, Facebook, and we keep talking about, oh, it was max effort day. Oh, it was dynamic effort mm-hmm. day. Keep talking about bands. Keep talking about chains. And everybody's sitting there like, why? They keep asking the question.
They don't understand.
So anyway, we're going to address a whole lot of that. So if we were on the ball, if we were really on top of what we were doing, we would have had questions coming in specific to what we're about to talk about. But we're just going to assume that we know what people's questions would be, and mm-hmm. we're going to answer it. So to kick it off, what would you classify the definition of max effort method? If you just some random dude right off the street, they're like, okay, how do you train on Tuesdays and Thursdays at your gym, how would you tell them that?
I would say depends on the variation. You'll very rarely ever go on a raw lift. Like you'll only ever hit a raw, even if it's for an opener or if it's for a meet. But other than that, you're training to your 100% max effort on a lift. Like you obviously want to train optimally to where you're not getting hurt, but you want to go to where you are almost, I wouldn't necessarily say you're trying to break on form, but you're just trying to reach to that 100% limit, almost to that 110% limit, to where you peak as hard as you can with that lift. So
would you classify it as pretty much the definition of like an RPE 10?
Mm-hmm.
If people are rolling that way?
Yeah. If people are into RPE, I would say RPE 10. Cause like if you were to say RPE 8, and it was moving pretty quick, that's not max effort. You're not going your hardest.
So I see a lot of people on social media that will post up a lift that they did. They'll call it their top set.
Mm-hmm.
And they work up to a set of three, or they do a double. They might work up to a set of five. And they're calling it max effort work. So in my opinion, and this is some stuff that I've come across through the literature with like Westside manuals, a bunch of stuff put out by Elite FTS and others. I actually think Matt Wenning has touched on it quite a bit too,
mm-hmm.
where if you're doing anything more than a single for that maximum effort,
then I wouldn't even call it max effort.
Then it's technically sub-maximal effort. Mm-hmm. It's not max. So anytime you can pull off a second rep out of a lift, you had enough reserved in the tank to perform the first rep first,
yep.
which leads you into a second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever, however high you go. So in my definition of max effort, it has to maintain as a single. So
yeah.
whatever you are capable of doing for a one rep max effort. So if you roll in on max effort day and you're trying to establish a three rep max, you might be a beginner lifter, and we're mm-hmm. just trying to work on the technique. We're trying to work on
trying to get form clicking.
Yeah. So like extra reps is going to equal to more practice, right? So more time under tension, give you a good feel for the weights. But at some point we have to ditch the whole three rep max, five rep max mindset. And we have to start getting people involved with singles so that they fit within that definition of max effort.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, Preston? Give me some feedback.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, like, if you're doing multiple reps, like, that's more of a mental game, right? Like, 10 rep max, like, that's brutal. Like, I wouldn't want to do it. No.
That's like, cardio, bro.
Yeah, that is cardio.
Yeah, I feel like a one rep max, that's mentally straining as well as physically, because you have to talk yourself into it, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you're talking yourself out of it before you go up to that platform, before you sit on that bench, then it's not happening. So I feel like it's definitely a one rep mental and physical game.
I love it, dude. Part of what I would also classify when we're looking for maximal effort training is that if you're hitting a PR, this is really tricky with my youth athletes because they're all over the place, dude. Like some days they're not even within 10 or 15 pounds of their max. Just they're having a rough day. They played off of a game that they're sore, they're tired. And so we really try to establish a PR every single time we come back to a certain lift. And so if you're running with a different type of bar, or if you're going to a different height of a box on a squat, if you're changing up your grip on bench press, you're going to have all those variations. But if you've done that specific variation once and you come back to it, you should have that PR recorded.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge, right? Is you're trying to always go in putting 5 more pounds on your bar.
Yeah.
But this is what's really tough for even the younger athletes that I train, is that I explain to them that if you can still fall within the definition of what maximal training is, you might have a day that you are not primed and ready to go to hit that PR, but we still need to work you up to what the day's max effort lift would be.
Yeah.
Even if it's 10 pounds less than your best lift on that variation ever, if you can work up to a really heavy single, let's say it's 10 pounds less than what your all-time best record on that lift is, as long as you work up to a heavy max where you're still straining, you're still putting in as much effort as you can, you're getting every muscle fiber firing as hard as you can, you're still following within the definition of max effort.
Mm-hmm.
So to backtrack, sometimes I'll see my youth kids PR by 5 or 10 pounds and the bar just pops right up.
Yep.
And I'm like, holy crap, dude, like you're having a good day. So let's keep going until you hit that next maximal effort lift.
And I'm sure the kids don't really understand it right now, but when you have people that understand more programming, they start questioning why we max out every single week and they think it's wrong.
Yep.
But they got to realize that every single week we are doing something new. So it's a new stimulus. It's a 72-hour process for every lift we do. So you're getting proper amount of time to recover. You're getting a new stimulus every single max effort. If we box squatted with the safety squat bar, we're not going to touch that box squat with that bar for months, weeks, like exactly. 2 months or even weeks. Like we won't touch it. And by that time, we're doing something new and something even more challenging almost every week, to the point where we touch that squat bar, it should feel the easiest to that point. Exactly. And I wish more people actually understood that, because they think maxing out every week is dumb, but they don't actually understand that we get that recovery time. And
yeah, and we don't even squat like every week. We squat every other week.
Yep.
Exactly. And then so that's where people mess up the program, is if they don't understand that concept of switching up the variable every week. Yep. That's where you become accustomed to the lift, and that's where you'll actually start making steps backwards. That's where you digress in the progress. So yeah, if we kept a raw squat, you know, raw standard competition style squat with a straight bar, and if you did that for 4 weeks straight, you're going to burn out real quick.
Really quick.
So that's the difference. So I think people, they mix that up with just brutal raw max effort training all the time. But the difference is that if we can switch up the stimulus every single week, there's just enough of a stimulus change that it keeps the body progressing in that, in that right direction.
It's something new almost every time.
Exactly.
And by the point when we revisit it, it's been so long already that it's just going to feel like a new stimulus compared to anything else.
Exactly. So new lifters, people that are just getting into it, they can get away with only having maybe 3 to 4 variations on a lift because they're still learning. The central nervous system hasn't just gone to its peak max potential, really.
Mm-hmm.
But you take a lifter that's been doing this stuff for 2, 3, 4 years, they're going to need that change in stimulus because of how advanced they're getting in those three or four variations. So then at that point, we say, okay, well, what can we do to change up the lift? If you've only been squatting raw for a year, but you just switch up two or three barbells at a time, then it's time to introduce a box. If you've been doing box squats your entire training for two or three years, then it's time to throw maybe a set of bands on there. Throw a couple links of chain on each side. That's the difference in that stimulus that's going to change it just enough to keep you progressing through it. So all the new guys, when they're on Instagram and they see dudes using the conjugate method hashtags and they're tagging up Westside and all that other stuff, and they start watching all the reverse bands with squat suits, and you've got
bench shirts,
you've got all sorts of weird variations of going on. Yeah, like just super weird variations. Mm-hmm. You got to understand that that lifter has probably been training this way for 10 to 20 years.
Yep.
So they're so advanced in their progression that that's what justifies them doing these crazy variations on their lift. Because if they were just doing raw barbell squats, they wouldn't be making progress. The stimulus is, they're used to it. They've been doing it forever. So at that point, they're needing to really come up with some creative stuff to try to get them progressing even further.
And I know some people, like when they're heavily into conjugate, like the nerd part of conjugate, not the basic theory of it, for circumaxing, instead of opening up with like, if you're squatting 400 and you're opening up with like 315, they're not squatting it raw, but they're actually applying bands for the resistance. Mm-hmm. So they're having around, let's say, 150 pounds of band tension. So they're actually squatting more than their max. By that point, when they get to their opener in the meet, it should just fly.
Yep.
After that.
That's a good point. So yeah, you can get down the rabbit hole with doing like your circumax. We've never really done it because
I don't think we're up there yet.
Everybody in this crew, everybody at the gym is still pretty new. Mm-hmm. I mean, I classify myself as barely intermediate because I've been doing this for 3-ish years.
And I would still classify me, Preston, Jarrett as beginners.
Oh, 100%.
Like, 100%. We're not even close to being called an intermediate lifter. Yeah. Beginner lifters for sure.
So yeah, when Preston first showed up, we pretty much just threw you in the deep end, dude.
Dude, because I was sore for a month. Dude, like, I was walking funny every day at work. I was just like, I don't know if I want to sit down today. Like,
that's awesome.
There were a few instances where I was like, yeah, you're not doing bands today. You're not doing chains. Like, just work on getting a couple raw PRs under your belt. Just learn the bars, learn the variations of our barbells and stuff. So yeah, definitely don't go into it head first, especially if you've never messed with bands ever. There's no reason for you to test your first PR in a conjugate style training, throwing that stuff on there. There's just no reason to. So yeah, something to think about. What else does everybody need to know about max effort training or maximum effort day when we're doing upper and lower days?
I would honestly say if you were to compare the days between max effort and dynamic effort, max effort days are way more intense, but they should be. They should be way more intense because everybody's zoned in. Everybody's trying to hit their PR on their certain variation.
It's like competing weekly.
Yeah, it is. Right? It's like competing weekly. That's like exactly how I would put it. Dynamic work, you still should, I don't know, a lot of people don't understand dynamic work either. I would say dynamic work is more of a controversial thing than max effort is, because people max effort, I guess you can say, all the time, to where once a week they're like, oh, I guess I'll try a one rep max on bench, but they've used the same bar, same weight, same form every single week, and now they're just burnt out to the point where they're slowing down to where now they need the dynamic work put in, which is going to involve them with submaximal weight with maximal force. So with dynamic work, I don't know, it's kind of off topic with max effort, but with dynamic effort, it's so nice because we had the conversation with Preston the other day. It's like, if I was to put 315 on the squat bar and told you to squat it as slow as you can, are you going to be able to get to the top? Most likely not.
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah.
You have to have speed with your lifts no matter what.
If there's not an element of speed into the lift, then you're going to get pinned every single time.
Yep.
That's what strength is it's a combination of power and explosiveness behind the strength portion of that.
Whether people like it or not, I know a lot of my friends don't like it when I say it, but I always say lifting is basically science. Because if you hear Louis all the time, he says all the time, force equals mass times acceleration. How are you going to move mass without having any speed involved with the lift?
Exactly. And you can compare it to whenever someone does a true tempo style of lift. Mm-hmm. Like if they're doing slow negatives, whatever they want to do, they're not using maximal weight to perform those sets. And anybody that does a lift like that, they have to bring the weight down to something very sub-maximal, because otherwise you'd just get pinned.
It's too heavy. And if you do tempos with maximal weight, you're going to be so wrecked. Like, I just know tempo squats and pause squats they really make you sore. They will really tear the body down quick.
That's more time under tension. It gives the body more time to break down more muscle fibers. Anything that's a slow negative on any lift, it doesn't matter what it is, when the muscles are being stretched slowly over time, that's what causes the muscle fiber tissue breakdown.
Yep.
So
what would be the benefit of that, though?
Muscle growth.
Yep.
It's more of a hypertrophy style of training. So your bodybuilders, that's why with bodybuilding training, you're never doing singles. You're never really even doing less than 5 reps, because anything over 5 reps is now increased time under tension per set. But then you're going to keep things a lot slower, a lot more tempoed because of that added tissue breakdown. So it's what makes you sore. So if you're sore, you're probably looking back on the last workout you did, and there was probably a little bit slower negative portion of that lift. So your maximal effort days can get you a little bit sore because of that fact. Is if you're straining for time, let's say dropping down into the hole on a squat, that's going to be a lot slower negative coming down than our speed work. So most people aren't going to get super sore off of the speed work that we're doing, because it's fast, it's explosive, it's powerful. Your muscle fibers aren't breaking down at that point.
Yeah, you're like in and out.
Yep, it's a lot of conditioning, a lot of cardio. It's a lot of central nervous system recruitment. So we're teaching muscle fiber motor units how to recruit better. So you're not really going to experience a ton of the soreness factor behind that.
Yep.
So kind of the difference between dynamic and maximum effort. So.
Yep.
Anything else on max effort?
So on a max effort day, right? Like if like you feel like not as sore as like you maybe want, would you justify like a 2 a day?
No.
No?
Yeah, no.
That, in my opinion, if you're making progress and you're not getting so sore that you feel completely wrecked and have to take a full rest day,
I
think you're following, you're falling right in the line of training optimally. And so that's how I tell it to my youth athletes too, is I say, hey man, if we can progress where you're getting stronger, you're putting up good numbers, and you can also go to practice the next day and not feel locked up and sore and tired, then we found your sweet spot. We want you right at that point, because if we're going to start overtraining and start pushing you past that line, then your recovery sucks and it takes longer to recover. So for a lot of people, that's really what it comes down to have really good training, is that if you can recover at the same rate and ability that your training allows, then you're right on par. Like, you're right where you need to be.
Yep.
But if you are training more than your ability to recover, you're not falling in that 1-to-1 ratio, and that's where you're going to start nosediving right into the floor. You're going to have to take a deload week, whether you like it or not, or your body's just
fried.
You're gonna break. You're gonna get injured, right? So you're trying to fall right on that line. Because if you're doing anything less than that, then you're kind of just wasting your time, because you're just in here not really putting in a good effort. Yep. Sure, you're not sore, but you're also not progressing. So
you
want to be right on that line where it's progress, but not feeling like you got ran over by a freaking truck.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What about the celebrities who like get like a 6-month contract, right? And then they bodybuild, get super jacked, and they're doing like max effort work for that 6 months to get buff for their role or in a movie.
Well, that falls within the line of their goal, right? Like if they have the timeline, they're like, hey, we need you ready for this role in a movie. You have to be ready by 6 months. I mean, that's the definition of their job, right? Is to be an actor, to come onto set looking however they need to look. They could put on weight for a role. They could look like a fat slob if that's their character. They could look like a superhero if they're going to be a freaking DC superstar, right? So I would say, and this is subjective, but I think they get a lot of help with drugs, and they get a lot of help with, you know, you got your best trainers in the world trying to get these guys to where they need to be. They've got the money for it, right?
So 100%.
They're going to throw as much money at a trainer as they absolutely need to. But I would also argue that that is their full-time job. So if all your priority is to train and sleep and train and sleep, then yeah, you can start throwing two-a-day sessions in there. You can start buckling down on the progress because that's their job.
Yeah, okay.
That's
it's all you're doing.
So people that are working heavy labor jobs, people that are lifting stuff all day long, it might take a little bit longer for you to recover. So to train 6 days a week probably isn't optimal for that person. But if you were to come in and put in the effort you need on two max effort days, two dynamic effort days, I mean, you can fall within that parameter pretty easily. You would control your volume. So after you hit your speed work or after you hit your PR on a max effort lift, then that's where we control a lot of those variables when it comes to the accessories. So your dumbbell work, your bodybuilding type stuff, your conditioning, that's all stuff that needs to be mitigated according to your lifestyle. So someone that sits at a desk all day, they kind of have just a sitting job. They sit in a truck all day, maybe. They're a truck driver. They could probably push harder and up the volume knowing that they're just going to be on their butt all day, not really expending nearly as much calories, right? Mm-hmm. So that's my two cents. I don't know if you have something similar.
I agree with the same thing. Just kind of if that's your job, you kind of have to dedicate yourself to it.
Yep.
So they're willing to do whatever it takes to make that role. So
and it's the same as, say, an NFL player or a UFC fighter. Like mm-hmm. That's their full-time job. That's all they got to prioritize is being in shape enough to do their job, which is play a sport, right? So for those guys, yeah, you could go train in the morning and you could go train in the evening because what are you doing all day? You're just recovering. You're just chilling. You're doing your thing. Maybe you have a couple meetings to be to. Certainly not anything strenuous, right? So that's kind of the difference in those lifestyles. So
mm-hmm.
You think an athlete like a pro player should be doing maximal effort training?
Yes.
Why?
Well, how are you going to get... So if you were to take an example of a football player and you were to take the example of box squatting, there's no way they're going to gain any strength on the field if they're going to do narrow stance squatting. Because no matter what, you're going to be in a wide stance during football. You look at a lineman, they're in a wide stance. You look at a receiver, tight end, wide stance. O-lineman, wide stance. No matter what, you are always in a wide stance. So with max effort, if you can get the ability of letting them hit a one rep max, say on a box squat, that's just going to get the hips stronger, hamstrings stronger. It's going to get the whole posterior chain stronger, which is what football players need to hit that max potential on the field, which is I wish more people understood that as an athlete, because I feel like more majority of athletes train too much of the anterior part of the group or muscle group, where the posterior chain is more important as an athlete. So I think not just a football player, but I think every athlete should train max effort.
Yeah, 100%. Like it's basketball players.
Yeah.
Like since training here, my vertical's gone up like 8 inches.
Yeah.
Ooh.
There you go.
That's a PR, baby. I like that.
That's awesome.
Almost ready to dunk.
We need to get a vertical slap.
Dude,
test.
I'm so down.
Well, we could put it right on the corner over here, right outside on the turf.
Now, and think about this though. You're a basketball player. How are you guarding someone? You're not guarding them with your feet narrow. You're guarding them wide. That's why when you do max effort, we will never do a max effort squat with a narrow stance.
Why not?
There's not as much, you're not going to see as much progress doing something anterior wise than you are going to do posterior wise. Majority of people already are 60% quad, 40% hamstring. So why train something that's already stronger where you need to get your hamstring strong? Because if you pull something in your hip or back, your hamstrings are weak. So you need to train those hamstrings no matter what. And every single athlete needs to do that.
And that's not to discredit that you should never do leg extensions or you should never do a type of goblet squat or a walking
lunge. You shouldn't abandon it, but you definitely need to prioritize your posterior chain just as much as you are training your
interior.
Especially
at the beginning, right?
Yep.
So when we first meet with athletes, that's going to be the main thing that we're assessing really is if they're doing a squat and they can't keep their knees from caving in on each other,
mm-hmm.
well, that's an issue that we can address very quickly. If we're having them do a step down off of a box and testing the integrity of that knee, if it, yep. if it wobbles even a little bit, that's something to pay attention to as well. Yep. You could have people do an assessment with a simple walking lunge up and down the turf. And if they can't keep that knee from collapsing into the middle, mm-hmm. that tells me weak glutes, weak hamstrings. We need to bring all those areas up. And oftentimes, I mean, 9 times out of 10, that's what you're going to see out of these athletes is yep. it's a slight lack of coordination mixed with just not having a lot of posterior chain development at all.
Yep.
But the ironic thing is that you roll into any high school gym, especially around in this area, when what are they doing for a squat? They're doing front squats. They got the barbell sitting right on their shoulders and they're having them sit as upright as they can. And there's certainly a time and a place for front squats to develop a good quad mm-hmm. off of an athlete. But if you're spending 90% of your time when they squat to do that type of a squat, mm-hmm. you're kind of wasting your time. Yep. So not to discredit that you should never do them, but you should definitely incorporate it into the routine every once in a while. But if you can't get an athlete wide without cramping or without showing any decent amount of strength,
mm-hmm.
that's an issue. Yeah. That's a big issue.
Because you'll get some football teams today and you'll have teams pulling hip flexors, but then you look at their programming, they're doing front squats 2 times a week, nothing posterior-wise. So it's like, well, no wonder why you're pulling a hip flexor, your hamstrings are weak. Exactly. Nothing posterior-wise is strong enough to handle your hip flexors.
And that's where, to change the subject a little bit, that's kind of mm-hmm. where some of the different types of barbells that we have, that's where they can come in handy as well.
Yep.
So if you're seeing an athlete that when they perform a squat to a box, if their hips shoot up but their chest and shoulders fall forward, that's a good key indicator that we can throw them on either an SSB bar or even a cambered bar
mm-hmm.
and to really start bringing up their upper back, their spinal erectors, anything that would be considered a weak link in that chain.
Yep.
So until we can get the athlete to the point that their form is looking just 100%, that's kind of where we assess it, is we look for that breakdown on the lift. But here's the kicker, is backtracking all the way back to max effort training.
Yep.
How in the world are you supposed to know where that weak link is in the chain if they're always ever squatting at like a 50 or a 60% of whatever you're they're capable of doing?
Weak links.
So that's the thing that pisses me off so bad about social media mm-hmm. is we've got Preston posting up his PR videos and you got just freaking dingleberry dudes that don't know what they're doing. And they're like, good luck with your back, bro. Like you're just going to jack yourself up.
Yeah.
But it's all part of the same conversation, is it's like, how are you supposed to know where your weak link yeah. is in your chain if you're not testing up to a maximal effort mm-hmm. to where the form actually wants to start breaking down? That's one of the benefits to doing maximal effort every yep. single week.
Dude, and I've never felt better. Like,
right?
Dude, I sit at a desk most of the day, and I stand up every once in a while, but like, it sucks sitting down all day and then coming in the next day to do squats, but like, just the warm-up and everything, like, mm-hmm. my hip flexors, like, everything is just like so much looser and like stronger than it used to be.
Heck yeah. Tell everybody what our very first movement on a warm-up is usually consisting of.
Yeah, body weight squats or...
What's the first movement? Because we normally run through three, right?
Yeah, so well today we did rows, body weight squats, and...
One more.
Remember the first one?
No.
Oh. Good morning.
Dude, good mornings.
Oh, yeah. Good mornings. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, it started with the...
So what if we don't do good mornings? What is usually at the top of the list?
Hypers.
Hypers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What if hypers aren't on the list? What's another one?
Banded hip hinges.
Ooh, there we go.
Love banded hip hinges.
So I actually do that on purpose. So if you're paying attention, we do, for warm-ups, I stole this from Matt Wenning. So it's kind of the same as what he does. We switch it up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but we pick three movements. Doesn't matter what they are. It does matter. It's going to consist of whatever we're training that day,
mm-hmm.
but they'll be on a revolution. So that in that sense, it doesn't really matter what you pick as long as it's something applicable to the movement. Of what you're doing that day. But the consistency is that out of the three movements we do, the very first one will always be a hip hinging movement no matter what. And it's only because everyone sits way too much. I mean, what are we doing right now for an hour?
Sitting.
Just sitting. So hips are creased over. We're elongating our hamstrings and our glutes, and everything's tightening up, especially after workout. So as a warm-up, the standard is, I don't care if you're 55, 60 years old, I don't care if you're 12 years old, it doesn't matter. You're going to do a hip hinging movement as one of the three, and it's going to start at the beginning. But then the warm-up is going to consist of three rounds of 25 reps a pop. So with that being said, if you suck at good mornings, if you suck at hip hinging type movements, mm-hmm. just come and warm up with us and you'll get 75 reps per day of some kind of hip hinging movement.
Yep,
that's going to help strengthen the hips, help strengthen the lower back, starts getting the hamstrings involved. So it wouldn't matter if you're bench pressing or overhead pressing or rowing or deadlifting or squatting, whatever your movement is for the day. If your hips aren't primed and ready to go, you're kind of just, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, really. You're just kind of setting yourself up for failure at that point.
Everything happens at the hips, right? So if you're not a good baseball player and you're trying to figure out how to generate power through a bat swing, mm-hmm. it's all through the hips, man. Yep. So you look at a UFC athlete, a boxer, when you're throwing punches, if your hips are not engaged, it's not a very powerful punch at all.
Yep.
Everyone tells you that the throwing the punch throws through the floor, through your hips, and through the arms. What are some other sports? I mean, you talk about pitchers in baseball. You can talk about basketball.
Every sport, golf, tennis.
Anything baseball. That you're doing on your feet, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, any sport that is being done in a standing position, all your power has to come from the hips. So why would you not pick your very first movement of the very first warm up being a hip friendly movement? Mm-hmm. Makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, dude. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to touch on maximal effort training. Probably not so much just the max effort part, but to give everybody that's listening, just to give my reasoning of why I choose to do conjugate style training. I kind of touched on this on a previous episode, but we'll just kind of go full circle and run on it again. I really am attracted to the idea of just being in tip-top shape year-round. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the major benefits of concurrent style training. We talk about conjugate. You're always max effort lifting every single week. You're also doing speed work every single week.
Yep.
You're also doing a repetition method with bodybuilding friendly movements every single week. And so that's what kind of drives me nuts about how I used to do my training back in before I even discovered what powerlifting was, is it was always bodybuilding focused. And there was never a point in the program that I was trying to really peak for any certain type of PRs. It was always just, okay, I'm going to do 8 to 12 reps of whatever exercise. I'm going to chase the pump. I'm going to try to build muscle mass any way I can. But there was a huge element of maximal effort training missing from the program.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't really a lot of conditioning as well. So the conditioning aspect of my training kind of went out the window. But you see very regularly on our whiteboards, what do we do today for rep ranges? What was our rep range today?
Lunges.
Three sets of 50 of reverse hyper, three sets of 20 of belt squat to, what was it?
Superset with
box jumps.
And then we supersetted the hypers with the 20 lunges.
Walking lunges. Yep. So we're not even working on a speed work day because it's more primarily focused on like a conditioning style of mm-hmm. a day. We're not even working down into the bodybuilding friendly rep ranges of eight to 10, 8 to 12 reps. Dude, we're climbing all the way to
heavy volume.
20 to 50 rep range. And when you're on a machine for 50 reps, it freaking sucks.
Yeah. That was so brutal.
Well, it's even crazier to think of West Side Barbell, like we had a conversation about. It was the volume they do is intense. So I don't even know if I mentioned it to you, but I was looking at an example workout they used to do through the Book of Methods. They would do four sets of 75 hamstring curls with the band. Dude, which is just, that's ridiculous.
I think that I could do that with maybe a black band.
But that shows why they're squatting what they're squatting, 1,100-pound squats.
It's actually the opposite, right? So mm-hmm. so it's not, you're doing so much volume in order to get the PR.
Yeah.
It's kind of the other way around. It's as you get stronger and you start putting more weight on the bar, the only way to maintain those levels of strength is to keep your volume going up.
Mm-hmm.
So if for whatever reason you plateau on some kind of a conjugate type of program,
yeah,
the number one underlining issue of why you're not doing it right is probably because your volume is taking a dip down.
Okay.
So if you want to keep progressing, it's the volume that has to keep up with the max. So if you go through Book of Methods and all the other manuals that he's published, he goes off of, once again, scientific type backing. It's all mathematically based, where if you're squatting 700 pounds, you better be doing a lot more volume on a reverse hyper than someone that's squatting 400 pounds.
Yeah.
That's the difference. So
how do you find your optimal rep range to meet your PRs?
It's all based on a formula. And if I remember right, at least for calculating your accessory stuff, so like hypers and leg curls and things like that, it should be 4 times the amount of volume of what your PR is in a squat. So like your 500 pound squatters, you should be doing up to 2,000 pounds of volume on those accessory movements.
Okay.
And you can break that down any way you need to. So if you're doing 2,000 pounds worth, but you're breaking that down over the course of like 20 reps at a time, you're probably going to have to climb up to 10 sets to get there.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the mathematical formula. You can be particular on rep ranges. So if you want to get stupid high reps in, you're going to do less sets per workout. If you're doing heavier stuff for lower rep ranges, you're going to have to justify doing more sets to climb up to that type of volume. So that's the idea behind that. And we could go down the rabbit hole with talking about Prilipin's chart and trying to stay within the parameters of Prilipin's chart and what he came up with. There's also another concept. I'm trying to remember what the acronym is for it. I'm going to have to look it up. We'll talk about it on the next podcast, but there's a whole nother formula that you can apply to your training that controls the intensity per workout. So we can do a little bit of research and study on that. I've researched a little bit. I haven't really had a chance to apply it to any of our training. It's pretty much, you know, your top level advanced stuff where you kind of have to just educate the athlete at that point and then have them really just kind of control it on their own. It's really hard for a coach to just control everybody's numbers, I guess. But yeah, we can get in the rabbit hole with that as well. But there's definitely mathematical formulas involved with that to be able to control that volume. So something to think about. So that's why it kind of bugs me if we run out of time, because I know for a fact that if we took the 2 hours just to work up to a single and max effort, and if you're ditching out on all the accessories behind that, and if you do that frequently over time, you're not going to be making progress and it's going to suck. So you got to be hitting the accessories. That's what keeps you progressing.
Yeah. And I know we talk about it a lot, but you know, for the listeners, what's the best way to work up to a one rep max?
Ooh, that's a good conversation. My general rule of thumb is I don't like to go over 10 sets, within the lift, within the workout. So my rule of thumb is I'm trying to hit a PR at about set 8 to set 9 roughly. So, the difference is going to be that if you are a stronger lifter, you're putting up more weight, you're going to make slightly bigger weight jumps as you increase through that. It really doesn't matter how strong you are. Your first set is always just going to be an empty barbell. That's kind of just been the standard. I like using the empty barbell as set number one, because that's your moment to really assess how you're feeling for the day. So if we're supposed to squat for the day and you do the empty bar and you're still feeling super tight up in the hips, or if your knee's giving you some fits and issues, that's now your opportunity to then go and do a little more bands, do a little more body weight squats, do some stretches, do whatever you need to do to get ready. And then if you need to, you take the empty bar again if you absolutely have to. So once you're at a bar, I try to go up by right about 10% jumps each time. So we're talking like you climb from anywhere between 30 to 50% of your max. And then we just slowly start adding weight to where it's 10% increases. So you're going to go 50, 60, 70, 80, work up to 90. By the time you're at 90, Louis suggests that you at least take 2 sets at the 90 or above before you hit your PR, just to make sure that you're acclimated all the way up to those heavier weights. If you're going from like a 75% to like a 80 or 90% and then just go for it, and you're going up to like a 102% or 105% for like a PR attempt, chances are you're probably not ready for it yet, and so you might set yourself up to fail. So yeah, if you're making anything over 15% jumps, to me, that's brutal. That's gonna suck. It's just too high of a jump. So if you're stronger, if you're squatting 600-700 pounds, you're probably justifying 50-pound jumps to get you all the way up to where you need to be.
Yep.
If you're only squatting 200 pounds, that's not a big deal. It just means that you're doing 20, 15-pound jumps instead, but you're still following within the same
10%
jumps, I guess. You're following along with everybody else that you're training with. So that's how I would scale up. I think the volume would be a little too intense if you were to try to PR past set 10. Mm-hmm. If you're getting into set 11, 12, 13, you've already put way too many reps into your acclimation sense to where now you're just getting fatigued, you're getting tired.
Yeah, and some heavy reps too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they'd be stupid heavy at that point. Or it just means that you're kind of wasting time with your jumps, right? So you might only be increasing the bar weight by 5 or 10 pounds when really you ought to be like adding quarters to the bar. So you just want to be smart about that. You don't want to waste any unnecessary effort on just adding the few 5 pounds. You might as well figure out what your 10% is and try to go off of that. So, and sometimes it's a little time consuming to have to do it that way. Like if you're trying to get right exact on your 10%, and let's say it's exactly 30 pounds, so you're being particular with loading 10s and 5s and your halves, sometimes that's a little cumbersome and a little bit tiring to where then I would just justify like, hey, if you can justify going from a plate to a plate and a quarter to 2 plates to 2 plates and a quarter, and then once you start getting up into like a 330, 350 is like a PR for you, mm-hmm. then you can kind of back off a little bit, and then you can start doing like, say, the 20 pound jumps. You just add a 10 each time, then you're kind of slowing it down a little bit as the weights increase. So that's another method on how to do it. But yeah, I'd also say your workout would probably be a little too long if you're doing anything over 10 sets. Like mm-hmm. most people just, it's just too much. it's too much volume.
You're just going to be super fatigued by the point you get to your one rep max if you're doing that much volume.
Yeah.
And some people will also consider what determines a working set versus a warm-up set.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can justify that technically you're not even in your working set range until you're over like 75 to 80% of your max. So if you're still warming up at 50%, 60%, those types of weights don't really matter so much as far as calculating volume, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to go off of the working set volume of your workout, if you're adding the weight of what your 40% was and your 50 and your 60%, it's just so light that it kind of just doesn't matter, right? It's just getting you prepped for anything 80% or above. So if you're trying to figure out what your workout volume is, I would say go based off the weight of what your 75 or 80% is, and then start adding up all the reps and all the weight up per rep that you get until you're up to your top set.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps with controlling volume and intensities and things like that too. So yeah, man. Well, what are we going to be doing for max effort next week? What do you guys want?
Oh, for...
I haven't thought about it, but...
For squat?
We're going to max effort squat on Tuesday. Kyle's got his brand new suit that needs to be broken
in. I was going to say, I really want a high box just to break it in a little bit. But other than that, we'll see what we can do. We can either high box, we can parallel box with... Because we just used the SSB bar last time.
We used the SSB bar. We've been using the Cambered bar a lot. I think it's time to rotate back to the Yukon bar, actually.
Yeah, I don't think we've done a Yukon bar low box squat in a hot minute.
Heck yeah. If I'm going to justify doing high box, I'd probably do it now because I'm far enough out from Worlds in September.
Yeah.
My general rule of thumb is that you want to try to get as close to your raw max variation as possible without actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're
closer to the meet,
if you're 6 months out from a meet, heck yeah, dude, like overload the high box, overload with reverse bands and all those crazy methods. You're mm-hmm. hitting really high, board press on your bench.
Yeah.
And then as you get closer to a meet, that's where you're bringing the boards down. You're going more into like deficits and things that are actually going to translate well for you going into a meet. So
yeah,
if you're high box squatting 4 weeks out from a meet, you're going to struggle at the powerlifting meet. It's going
to
suck.
Yeah, I am down to high box next week.
Yeah. If you can justify doing a low box, like well below parallel of your squat a couple weeks out, that's perfect, man. Like that's teaching you how to get down to depth. It's teaching you how to strain like intensely. That's all the stuff you need when you're leading up to a meet. And then I would even argue too that maybe your last three or four squat sessions before a meet, you're actually going to end up doing it raw just so that you get used to the reps, you get used to, you know, whatever equipment you're using for your competition as well. So at least for Jarrett, he's definitely squatting raw on Tuesday. We'll throw a barbell at him, probably cambered bar, and just see where he's at. Cause he Yukon bar squatted last time we squatted.
Yep.
He did pretty good there. So we're going to throw a different bar at him, still keep it raw. For bench press, we did floor press this last week. So I'm game to switch up a barbell. We can do football bar variation. Football bar to a floor press would be pretty sick. So
that'd be cool.
We got options. That's the best part. Keeps the training fresh. You don't have to get sick and tired of just,
Same bar,
same rep, same.
Same bench.
It's always changing. Same bands. I freaking love it, dude. Keeps it fresh. So sweet, fellas. Well, I think we did pretty good today. Got anything else you want to add before we close out? I gotta get going, man. My Saturday is wasting away.
Yeah, ditto.
I got family coming into town. My little kid's got graduation from preschool, which is the weirdest thing ever. Like I'd never graduated more than once. So
that's awesome.
It's weird. So gotta go do that. It'll be fun. Got some family coming in from out of town, and we'll go hang out for the day. So
get your protein.
Dude, I need some food, man.
Dude, I'm so hungry.
I'm headed home to get some eggs. We're going to cook up some oatmeal and throw a little AM protein from Phoenix into the mix. It's all about the AM protein, man. That stuff is good.
So I really want to make like Muddy Buddies, but with that blueberry muffin protein.
Ooh, that sounds good, man.
Dude, right?
Let me know how it goes.
Okay, I will.
That's freaking sweet.
I'm probably going to try it tomorrow, so.
Okay. If you have any left, bring one in on Monday and I'll...
Okay.
Let your brother eat any of them.
Yeah, he's sandbagging too much to have that.
Tell him he's got
to
earn it, man. He's got to start hitting more of the squats and deadlifts before he starts eating the protein.
Yeah, tell him to come in Monday. Like, just force him. Drag him out of bed.
All right. I'll just, like, deadlift him into the car.
Yeah, there you go.
I got a really good way to wake him up.
Water?
It involves smelling salts.
Oh, yeah, dude. That would be... Well, he'd be pissed.
That'd be awesome.
Wake up swinging.
Heck yeah, dude. Yeah. They need to come up with a concept. Like, go reach out to one of the smelling salt companies and make a device that hits you for an alarm clock in the morning.
Oh, dude, it just like turns on a fan and just then
figure out a way to get the cap to come off automatically. And then as the alarm goes off, it's just hitting you right in the nose.
That'd be so funny.
What if you just like pre-pressurized it right into like a little capsule, and when the alarm goes off, it just releases it.
Oh my gosh, dude.
And then it just hits you right in the face and you're just like,
you put it in little plastic bottles. If that thing gets... If there's so much pressure in that plastic bottle, it will blow up.
Dude, yeah. Like when we opened the No BS one at the meet, and it would just...
Sounded like a soda can.
It was brutal. I've never had any other companies that I've gone through that have legitimately had a pressurized bottle that hissed at me.
The only one I've heard is the No BS and the Bear Down. Because the Bear Down will hiss, but after you open it, it just vacuum seals. Gotcha. And it will stay in it for a long time.
That's brutal,
so.
Man.
Yeah, but I hate waking up like in a jar. Like I turn on the gentle wake up, so my lights slowly
dim up.
Yeah, slowly turn on. It's like a sunrise.
Heck yeah,
that's awesome.
I need to figure out how to do that.
smart lights, best thing ever.
Cool. That's sweet.
I like that.
I want some of those.
Right on, fellas. Well, yeah, recover hard this weekend. We still have to do our speed work on Monday with bench press, so that's gonna... It's going to be a fun one.
We're
waving all the way back down to 50%. We're going to just go up in band tension for the next 3 weeks on the wave. And
we're going to do that for bench too.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll follow the same suit that we did for squat and deadlift today. And then we'll just keep on the trend. So next week when we do a podcast, we're going to switch gears, and instead of talking all max effort, we're going to start dabbling into more of the dynamic effort stuff. We'll talk about rep ranges, the schemes, the band tension. I think we need to take a good 10-15 minutes out of the whole explanation to just explain what the bands do for you, right? And then we'll kind of go from there. So, all right, fellas. Well, I think we're about done. So you guys have a good rest of your day. We'll catch you all here in a couple of days. Come back Monday.
Sweet.
Heck yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. Peace out. We're signing out.